Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Attention BetMGM customers. Have a friend who loves sports as much as you do? Here's a chance for both of you to earn a $50 bonus when they sign up through BetMGM's Refer a Friend program. Just sign into your BetMGM account and click on the Refer a Friend program to send your friend a message inviting them to register a new account in the same state you use BetMGM in. Once your friend signs up and makes a deposit, they'll receive a $50 bonus. And once your friend places a bet with their bonus and the wager is settled, you'll receive a $50 bonus as well. Share the excitement and get a $50 bonus every time you refer a friend to BetMGM. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Ohio only. New and existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire in 30 days. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Happy Thanksgiving. Hey guys, I just wanted to let you know that everything over at BirdlandSports.com, all the t-shirts, sweatshirts, and other things, is all on sale this week for Thanksgiving at 20% off. That includes film study t-shirts and sweatshirts. So head on over there and grab some Christmas gifts or grab a shirt or sweatshirt for yourself for all your Baltimore sports fans. Check out BirdlandSports.com.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, here for this week's Know Your Foe episode, and we are really pleased to have Lori Fitzpatrick joining us. She's at USA Today Touchdown Wire. Lori, how you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. How about yourself?
I can't complain. Second time for you on the show. Really appreciated having you on. Last time the Ravens played the Jaguars. You bring experience as an ex-running back, correct, yourself?
Yes. And so I'm excited to kind of dive into that a little bit. ETN's doing pretty well. So yeah, I'm excited, man.
All right. And other people can follow you on Twitter handle?
Yeah. So it's at Lori Fitzpatrick. And the last name, I had to keep the Fitz in there, but it's there's no more vowels after that. So it's Laurie, then Fitzpatrick, and that's FITZ. Then PTRCK.
All right. Outstanding, Lori. So let's dive right into it and talk about the Jacksonville Jaguars. Actually, it's one thing I need to do first. Thank our sponsor. And that's Liquid Death, the water that will murder your thirst. Really appreciate them sponsoring us. They've been good to us. They present their product in aluminum cans. Certainly try them out for the flavor. Stay for that. But the aluminum cans, if you have that green streak in you, are much more recyclable than plastic, which will end up in a landfill. So we really appreciate you giving their product a try. Lori, again, I'm sorry to restart here, but tell us about the Jacksonville Jaguars and their offseason. Let's start with that.
Yeah, so I think they didn't do too bad in the draft this year. One thing I will say is I think we all expected a little bit more from Trayvon Walker. As the first overall pick. But Doug Peterson is kind of taking the whole Andy Reid approach, where Andy Reid doesn't use his rookies too much. It seems like Trayvon Walker is used a little bit more on first and second down than he kind of comes off the field. And he's doing okay, but I just think that we expected him to do a little bit more. But I mean, I think he is still a really good pickup between him and Hutchinson. I think Hutchinson has been in the news a little bit more. He got that one interception last week, but Walker had a similar interception himself. And I think as soon as he kind of adds a little more pass rush moves to his arsenal, I think he'll be a little bit better. But as in Trayvon Walker, I just, right now I'll kind of give it like a B minus, mm-hmm. In terms of if I were to give that pick a grade as of right now. Another pick was Devin Lloyd, who's the linebacker, and he started off the season pretty well. But as the season has gone on, actually Chad Mumba, the linebacker from, I think it was Utah, mm-hmm. he's kind of taken some of his snaps. So
go back to Walker for a second, but I wanted to talk about Mumba too. With Walker, you mentioned he's playing a lot of first and second downs, but he's coming off the field on some passing downs. It's a little bit surprising to me.
So he will drop off. He will drop it in coverage. But I think that they really want him to be more of a pass rusher, okay. Than anything. He has on first and second downs, 180 pass rush snaps. And on third and fourth down, it's around 90.
Okay. All right. So, interesting that, they certainly got him as the best available pass rusher in the draft. Effectively, right? Or did they look at him and say that he's a run defender as well?
Yeah, so I think it's actually all three. So pass rusher, run defender, and he can also drop back into coverage. So as an outside linebacker.
Okay, so Chad, I always pronounce it Mumba in the thing, but it's Chad Mumba from Wyoming.
Oh no, I think it is Mumba. I think you're right.
Okay, that's okay. I was very excited about it. He was one of the mid round linebackers that I thought the Ravens might really look at, and they ended up playing the cards they had and doing very well with it with Patrick Queen taking a big step forward and then picking up Roquan Smith in the middle of the year here. But Chad Mumba was definitely a good tackler at Wyoming.
Yeah, and he's been playing really well against the run. He's really penetrating the gaps really well, trying to get a lot of tackles behind the line of scrimmage. I think he's actually been doing pretty well at that. And the Jaguars are kind of in the middle of the pack when it comes to run defense. They were towards the bottom last year, so they have gotten better. And I think he's coming in to replace Devin Lloyd on those run fits. He certainly did last week.
Okay, so they're depending on Lloyd more as a coverage guy, as a third down backer that they leave in there.
Yeah, but I think they're just trying to see what Chad brings first. Okay. But he's definitely more of a run fit type of defensive guy.
All right. How about other developmental surprises the Ravens, the Jaguars have had this year? Who's really stepped up and as maybe a second, third, or fourth year player who's at a new level now?
Well, first, I wanna talk about the center. He's actually a rookie, Luke Fortner, mm-hmm. and he's just done a fantastic job. I just wanted to kind of throw that out there because as a center, like outside of like Linderbaum, I believe. Like there weren't a ton of guys that were really talked about in the draft. And I just, even though he is a rookie, that might be something that the Ravens could target this week. But at the same time, like he's been doing a fantastic job. So, yeah, moving on to players that have done maybe second or third year, guys like that. Well, ETN would be the main one, but it's tough to say, like, is it his rookie season technically? Because he only really had like 10 snaps last year. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of interesting, but he's definitely stepped it up in terms of production. I believe he's top 10 in yards. He's top 10 in yards after contact, I believe. think he's seventh in broken tackles. So ETN, especially after James Robinson's departure to the New York Jets, he's been able to carry the load quite well.
All right. Outstanding. I always love to hear what you think about running backs in particular with your background. You mentioned Luke Fortner again, another guy, the Ravens, obviously we're looking for offensive linemen in this draft, and Linderbaum being taken was, you know, one of the guys they were targeting. And the question was for the Ravens, a lot of they had a need and they just wanted to, I think, fill it with a value pick at some point. And I guess at 25, they figured that Linderbaum was too much of a value to pass up. But Luke Fortner was one of the guys I really liked. And I thought he was probably going to last until the third round. Then he ends up going at 51. Cole Strange ended up going at 29 to the Patriots. So that was the first of a set of dominoes that really made the centers all go quickly. So I think it ends up being the teams that jumped a little bit early, the gun to get a center, hopefully get paid off in this draft. And hopefully that includes both the Ravens and Jags. Mm-hmm. How about some injuries that are occurring right now? What's going on with the Jags health-wise?
Honestly, I think they're like a top five team in terms of health. They really don't have many injuries. Over the last couple weeks, Jamal Agnew, their kick returner, he was having some trouble, so he was out. They also lost Shaquille Griffin, the other corner, from, you know, all those years in Seattle. But honestly, he wasn't really playing up to expectations anyway. So I believe he is on IR right now. He had a little bit of a back issue. They do have Trey Herndon in there playing right now, and he's been targeted a lot over the last couple weeks. So that is a little bit of an issue. In terms of injuries, they're actually quite well, to be honest, which is kind of surprising.
So Chaseon is still out.
So he is Clavon. He was just actually put on IR today, but he didn't really seem like he was making much of an impact. So I guess I didn't include him because I didn't think it was much of a blow.
Okay. All right. Well, fair enough. And I see Ben Bartsch and Jordan Smith are also on IR. I don't know if that's expected to be for the year or not.
Yeah, I believe Ben Bartsch, he kind of went out early in the season. And I don't like to just like throw guys under the bus, but you know, he may have been the worst offensive lineman on the line. So it's not terrible that Tyler Shatley is in there. He was actually the backup center last year, and then he was just able to kind of shift over to left guard and kind of play there, and he's done okay.
All right. All right, very cool. Anything else about the offseason you want to talk about? Maybe anything in the front office that happened, coaching staff, anything that any hires that you think have been good for developmental purposes?
Well, obviously Doug Peterson was the biggest change. And you know, he's brought in some pretty good guys. You know, Press Taylor, I think he's done a great job with Trevor Lawrence. But the defensive side of the ball is, that's been a little bit of an issue right now. And Mike Caldwell, he was from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I think they're as their linebackers coach. So now he's a defensive coordinator for the Jaguars. And it seems like they're not able to really get off the field. It's interesting because, you know, they do really well in pass defense. But in terms of like time of possession, they give up a lot of first downs. So I just think there needs to be a little bit of adjustments on Mike Caldwell's side. But I think in the end, it's just going to take a little bit of getting used to all the new coaches in, you know, in one place. But yeah, Doug Peterson obviously was the biggest addition. I really think he's been able to develop Trevor Lawrence a lot better than, you know, his predecessor, Urban Meyer. So, yeah, I think Doug Peterson, he's brought Trevor Lawrence along pretty well. But there was a move that was made that actually wasn't during the offseason. And that was only a couple of weeks ago. They actually signed Calvin Ridley. And I think that was one of the biggest moves. It's just a shame that obviously he's not going to be available till next year. But I would say that would be one of the biggest moves, and he's going to provide a pretty big impact next year for Trevor Lawrence, because if, you know, we have to be honest, and he doesn't have a number one wide receiver, like slot guys can't really be number one. Cooper Kupp might be an exception. I'm referencing to Christian Kirk. Mm-hmm. He's obviously their best wide receiver, but bringing in Calvin Ridley was obviously one of the biggest moves that they made so far this season.
Well, good. It's good to see Ridley get a second chance. Obviously, a lot of people liked him for the Ravens back in 2018, right, or 2019, whichever the year he was drafted. He was one of the players under consideration for the Ravens. But anyway, does anybody in Jacksonville, or has anybody expressed a concern that the petty gambling thing he did, which is, you know, just making a small bet himself, obviously, is a concern at all?
No, I think the only thing that was kind of a concern was the bet that he made, was that the Falcons would beat the Jaguars. And that was the bet that he got caught, with. So if anything, it was just a little ironic. But no, I don't think anybody's worried. Jacksonville is a place that that can afford to give guys a second chance. It's pretty much throwing everything at the dartboard, see what sticks, and nobody's really focused on the pass at all.
Right. A lot of people, and I don't want to drag this out too long, but it is kind of an interesting topic. A lot of people think that the Ridley suspension was really overdone relative to other things, personal behavior things often, yeah. And I'm setting aside gambling, often do get fairly strict penalties, like Ben Roethlisberger in the bathroom and those kind of things. But if Ben Roethlisberger in the bathroom is 6 games or whatever it was, 4 games after a review, and this is a whole season, that seems out of line. But the NFL has a long history of coming down very hard on crimes against the game, as opposed to actual crimes that are occurring outside of in terms of personal behavior
and domestic violence. Yeah. Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. So I think that's really important for a sport that's completely gotten in bed with the gamblers the way they have. If they want this to be a big part of the revenue, they have to clearly show no tolerance for the game being crooked. So that kind of thing is. It's orders of magnitude worse than Tom Brady inflating footballs, which is also bad. And it's still,
Yeah, I mean, it's just tough because you don't ever, there was the whole thing about the NBA refs kind of throwing games and everything. But you never hear anything about the NFL refs. And I find it hard to believe that there's zero referees that have ever bet on the game. And yet a player does. And I believe he was injured at the time. I think he wasn't even playing. So I don't understand how that, actually messes up any integrity of the game. But 100%, I agree with what you're saying. And it's just like, if anything, it should be something maybe more strict on the refs. Ridley wasn't even playing. So I just find that to be a little funny, but yeah, you're absolutely right about that.
And that's a really good point about the officials too, that they need to be squeaky clean, and they are reviewed. They are constantly, graded and downgraded each week. And we just had Jerome Boger's crew throw 3 very quick whistles at the Baltimore Ravens this last week. Don't know if you picked up on any of this or heard about any of it, but it was bad. And one of them negated a fumble return for 6 for Humphrey. So they got the possession corrected, but
Yeah, no, I feel the same way. And if it's like, you just have to dive a little bit deeper into that and why the refs kind of maybe call things a little one-sided. And we just don't hear about it in the media ever about refs being downgraded for what? Like, tell us, give us a little bit more insight on why these refs are doing these,
Yeah, wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't that be great to understand, hey, this crew was downgraded by 4 points for these 3 calls kind of thing. If you just had that information, then you say, well, okay, the NFL is doing something about it. I'm glad to see this. This will affect Boger's retention at the end of 2 years if he continued to, be this way.
Yeah. Transparency. That's all I ask.
Yeah. No, that's great. Let's move on to the offense. And obviously, guys excited about getting Trevor Lawrence last year. Tell us what you've seen developmentally from him.
So I think that for starters, he's definitely thrown a lot less interceptions. He doesn't feel like he has to throw it up there to kind of save the game anymore. He's definitely kind of held his arm back. I remember doing a piece a couple weeks ago on how he wasn't even throwing the pass 40 yards downfield. There were like 4 weeks in a row where he was not throwing any deep passes. Mm-hmm. One, they really don't have any deep threats outside of Christian Kirk, who you can double team, but who else can really get down the field faster than these new age corners that are tall and speedy? That's not really the Jaguars' game. That doesn't really fit their personnel. So they're more of a high percentage completion type of passing team. I could tell that Trevor Lawrence is going through more calculated throws, but he's also not taking checkdowns. It could be seen as a bad thing in terms of if you were to look at three and outs. They're really not having a ton of three and outs. So it seems like he's just trusting the play calls a lot more. And he's kind of standing in there and he's delivering second level passes pretty well.
Okay, so that meshes with what I'm seeing. If I look at the next gen stats, he's at 2.57 time to throw. So the ball is out quickly for him. Is a lot of the Jaguars scheme built around getting the ball out quickly, whether it's wide or on slants or other places to try and get the play moving quickly?
Yeah, I would say, they've been able to run some like whip routes with the tight ends. But not as many slants because they're not like a yak team. They're not running a ton after the catch. It's kind of like trying to get the ball past the first down sticks, and that's about it. They're running some dagger routes, some dagger concepts on one side, maybe where the inside guy runs down the seam, and then or the outside guy runs down the seam, and then the slot maybe cuts to the outside. So they're running some sideline passes, but it's really down to it's really at the first down markers, and more running more like concepts and less relying on the athleticism of one or two guys.
Lawrence, a real holdover in terms of being a tall quarterback at 6'6". It's a dying breed. There are many more now players who are shorter, mobile quarterbacks in the league. And Lawrence really looks more like Joe Flacco. He's a better athlete, obviously, but he looks more like Joe than a lot of other quarterbacks around.
By now, you're probably noticing that there's strange tall boys of beer in the bottled water section of your local stores. Well, that's because it's not beer. It's actually mountain spring water from the Alps, and it's called Liquid Death. Why is it called Liquid Death? Well, because it will brutally murder your thirst, and their infinitely recyclable Tallboy cans help bring death to plastic bottles. They also donate 10% of their profits from every can sold to help kill plastic pollution. By now, you probably know how much I love Liquid Death. Well, every week I tell you about a different way I've used Liquid Death to mess with people. This week it was taking a cooler full of Liquid Death to the softball game. Because as our team chugged down Liquid Death, our play improved while the other team drank other stuff and maybe got a little sloppy out on the field. So take Liquid Death. The other team has no clue what you're doing. Or take it to work. We've talked about that many times. Drag it around to your friends at school. Maybe the carpool lane. Maybe we'll talk about the carpool lane next week. Just take Liquid Death. Enjoy it. It's ice cold water. You're going to have a great time and fun. Go get Liquid Death at your local Harris Teeter or 7-Eleven or find Liquid Death retailers near you with their store locator tool at liquiddeath.com/filmstudy. That's liquiddeath.com/filmstudy.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because you would expect a guy at his height to take like a lot of sacks because maybe he wouldn't be able to be as mobile, kind of looking like a baby giraffe out there with that height. But honestly, that's one area where Lawrence shows a lot of, I can't even say development, because it's not like last year he took a ton of sacks, but he just continues to show a lot of poise in the pocket, and he's able to get rid of the ball. I think he has the eighth best sack percentage per game. He's not really giving up a ton of sacks.
Yeah, I was looking at that, and because it's something we look at every week. Yeah, the sacks per pass attempt. I'm looking at the offense now. Is at 4.52%. So that's the third best in the league, I'm thinking now. Maybe I have this wrong. So,
Some of these sites say one thing, other sites say I got mine from team rankings. I think it's per game or maybe per drive.
Okay. This is per pass attempt. So that could differ certainly. And it's from the NFL GSIS site. So,
I would expect it
to be good. Yeah. So, outstanding. In terms of touch on the football, in terms of leading receivers, how's he been with that?
So that's really been his weakest point right now. I would say personally, just watching the film, touch has been a little bit of an issue. I'm not comparing him to Lamar Jackson or anything, but we've seen it even with really good quarterbacks, like with Lamar Jackson, when guys are wide open and maybe just like the fundamentals from just trying to either evade a sack, maybe they're leaning back a little bit too far and it kind of sails a little bit. Those are happening. I wouldn't say like often, but it's definitely a weakness of his game, just like the inaccuracy. And then when guys are just like wide open, sometimes he'll overthrow them with the touch, where it just seems like he's trying to put a little more power in it instead of just like, you know, using his depth perception and hand-eye coordination, which is AKA touch. Instead, he's trying to like make an accurate throw, and it's just, you know, just throw it up and let the player come down with it. And that seems to be a little bit of a struggle right now. But as the weeks go on, like ever since that Raiders game, it seems like he's something kind of clicked. He's definitely been more accurate as of the start of November.
All right. It sounds great. Let's move on to the wide receiver core. And you mentioned a lack of a true number one threat, but go through and tell us who they have at wide receiver, who they line up in 11 personnel in particular.
Yeah, so they have Marvin Jones, who everybody knows. Who he's more of a sideline guy. So he's more of a guy that, you know, you don't really want to give it to him 50-50 balls. They don't really have a 50-50 type of receiver, but he is a sideline vertical receiver who they can rely on. Zay Jones is their other receiver on the other side. And he's more of the possession guy. He, you know, he'll take hits over the middle. He can move from the sideline to right next to the offensive line too. He'll come, you know, right off of a tight end. He'll kind of run those whip routes, but he's more of the possession guy. Lawrence will rely on him when they really need to get a first down. And Christian Kirk is that speed slot guy. He's that pristine route runner who will use his speed to kind of get downfield, be more of a field stretcher. And he'll also run some like shallow crosses or deep crosses to kind of split safeties to get somebody open.
Okay. So a couple bigger receivers in there. Well, Zay, I guess, is in between, but Marvin Jones is clearly a bigger receiver. One of the Ravens' problems has been having a third cornerback let's call it a fifth defensive back now, who can provide anything, because they actually went to Kyle Hamilton as their full-time slot corner, and he's a free safety in college and not a fast one, but he played very well in the position, and he was better than their other options. It seems like this would have been a good game, but he's hurt now and unfortunately going to be out for a few weeks after playing well. So it'll be one of two guys. It'll be Brandon Stevens playing on the outside with Humphrey in the slot, or it'll be Pepe Williams, who's also a rookie, playing in the slot otherwise. So that might be a good matchup for the Jags. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think so. Even though Lawrence doesn't really have a number one guy, he will switch them up depending on the matchups. Doug Peterson is a really good game planner where he will kind of put a guy at number one depending on how, you know, the defense comes out.
It's good. You get ex-quarterback is going to give you that, right?
Mm-hmm, exactly, yeah.
All right. Let's move on to the running backs. I know you want to talk about Travis Etienne, but I'm interested to hear about all of them, particularly from you.
Well, I was a little upset, going to be honest, when they got rid of James Robinson. I was always, you know, a big cheerleader of his, you know, being a female and all. Nah. James Robinson is just, he's a guy that you really like. You know, he undrafted free agent. He did really well. I always thought that him and ETN were, not going to say their run styles are the same, but they can be used in the same scheme. And that was always kind of an issue. Doug Peterson had to go with the hot hand. And I thought that that was kind of his coaching style anyway, especially when you go back to 2017, you know, with the Eagles, they switched up running backs quite a bit. So I just, you know, I thought that they were going to go with the hot hand, and instead they got rid of James Robinson. So right now it's ETN. He's kind of on a lone ride there. They have Jamichael Hasty. He's from San Fran. And Snoop Connor is a rookie. Snoop hasn't really been getting many touches. I'm not going to lie. Hasty has been out there a little bit more. He has a little bit more of the I don't want to say explosion speed, but like, you know, he's able to kind of get outside a little bit easier in terms of like kind of getting outside the tackles. ETN obviously has done a great job in between the tackles, but it seems like, you know, the Jaguars are running a zone style scheme.
Now, I'm glad you're getting into this because I know you have an upcoming article. Maybe you want to tell folks about that, or if you don't, that's fine too. But with the Jaguars, the Ravens obviously run a lot of different concepts in their run game. They really have to because they're really trying to stretch the line of scrimmage horizontally and offer a lot of threats that move defenders around and can frankly create space for Jackson a lot of the time. In the case of the Jags, are you seeing that kind of a varied run game that it really helps to have two different stylistic fits, like have a power guy and then have a speed guy you can go to, or have a mix of different running back styles you can bring in by you know, what you want to run on a play?
No, unfortunately, it's not really that type of offense. It's pretty similar to what you see in Kansas City. Like, they're not really running too many different running backs back there. They'll put more wide receivers in the backfield and see if they can run some jet sweeps or some even wildcat at times. But Hasty hasn't really been like a viable number two. I'm not saying he's bad or anything, but it just seems like ETN has taken majority of the load. They're not running like too many gap style type of run plays. It seems like it's all pretty much zone. So, yeah, they'll throw like Jamal Agnew in the backfield at times and kind of see if he's able to get outside of the tackles. But, yeah, they're not like really switching it up too much. They don't even use a fullback at all. So,
yeah, I was going to ask. So they run pretty much out of 11 most of the time, or if they run out of 21, it's with a tight end in the backfield?
Yeah, if they do, but they rarely do that. If anything, they'll run more of a 12 or even 13 personnel. We've seen, where they will have the three tight ends. So they have Evan Engram as more of the receiving tight end, Chris Manhertz, who's more of obviously the blocker, but he can catch, and then Dan Arnold, who does a little bit of both too, but sometimes you'll see all three of them out there.
I want to say Arnold had a big catch against the Ravens the last time they played him.
Yeah, I am kind of wondering why they don't get him involved a little bit more. Maybe this week will be the game, especially if, you know, if your memory serves you right and he did well against them last year, you would kind of want to get him a little bit more touches this week. So, you know, we'll see about that.
All right, fair enough. I think we talked about that. Any other common plays or formations that are like the Jaguars' bread and butter?
I would say, the daggers, like I kind of touched on a little bit earlier. They like to kind of like run those rub routes where they will run, right off of each other to kind of get open on the sideline. Lawrence has been doing really well throwing in like tight windows between the sideline and his receiver. He's obviously been able to get it out there really well. So I would just say that in general, just more of those like rub routes and daggers, and they're not like running too many mesh or anything mm-hmm. like that. You would expect them to with Christian Kirk in there. It's more of a stop the clock, throw to the outside, or they're running the ball up the middle.
Now, it's very interesting, the detail you're giving us on the rub route. So let me add this layer to it. Is it mostly a two-man game then when they run any kind of rub or dagger or any kind of attempt to run one route off another, where they just line up two receivers, or do they ever bunch and go with either three or four in one spot?
So they will run bunch. Sometimes they'll run, those trips bunch. They don't really run a spread trips as much as a bunch trips, just to kind of keep those cornerbacks off of the line of scrimmage to give them a little bit more room. But outside of that, it is a two-man concept on one side.
All right. Outstanding stuff. Very, very detailed. Let's see. I think I asked you about the third cornerback. Anything you would expect the Panthers to attack about the Ravens? You mentioned Peterson is some up matchup based, and that's I think you said it actually about Lawrence. Do you think we'll see, with Humphrey and Peters in there, and maybe Brandon Stevens is the third cornerback, that Brandon Stevens all of a sudden is getting 60% of the targets?
Yeah, I think Christian Kirk might be that highlight of this game. Just because if the Ravens are having trouble at their nickel corner trying to figure that out, whoever that third guy is, mm-hmm. you're saying Humphreys, he has been playing the nickel, right?
Yeah, they moved him to slot. They really want to play him on the outside because Humphreys' physicality works very well there. But they moved him to the slot because they didn't have another better alternative, and they put in Brandon Stevens on the outside. Stevens is kind of halfway between a safety and a corner. Played both coming out of school. The Ravens really haven't found where he's good in the NFL yet in his second year. So, it's been a kind of a tough run for him so far.
Yeah, they'll probably look to attack that a little bit with Christian Kirk, kind of see if they'll get him a little bit more involved. Like I said, it's more of a game to game game plan and less of a like, okay, Davante Adams is our guy. Let's just get him open, type of offense.
All right. Outstanding. Let's move over to the defense. So the first thing I always like to ask is how do they typically line up versus very heavy formations? Because that's basically all the Ravens present to the opponent, is formations that have at least two of tight ends and six offensive linemen and fullbacks. So they run a lot of 12, but they also run a lot of heavier things like 22 and 13. Where you're seeing even more tight end and fullback centric offenses, and of course Patrick Ricard, being who he is on the field a lot. So how do you expect the Jaguars to kind of line up against that in this game?
So they do run with nose tackles. Devon Hamilton has come in there, but they have had trouble with those heavy personnel schemes. And it was because of their off-season pickup from the Jets, Fatukasi. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I kind of have to like really pronunciate his name so I don't say it wrong. So he's really been like their big force on the defensive line. He's been able to kind of penetrate the backfield and stop those runners. And he was hurt, so his first game back I think was last week. And he's still kind of getting used to it, getting back in the swing of getting those defensive snaps. But they certainly run you know, they'll pull out, you know, nose tackles. They'll really stuff the middle. I think it would be better if Trayvon Walker was kind of put to the inside a little bit because of his lack of pass rush moves on the outside, like getting around tackles. So there are times where they do put Trayvon Walker into the middle. But they mostly run a 3-4 defense. So, you know, but that's with obviously two outside linebackers on the outside. So there are five guys on the line of scrimmage.
Right.
So that's kind of, it does work well against heavy personnel. So, you know, yeah, that's how they pretty much try to stop that.
Okay. So we'll probably see that. And then on third down, third and seven, third and eight, when it's not a real third and short situation, how do they like to line up? Do they go to any kind of automatic dime formation where they take a linebacker off the field, or do they stay with a nickel and they like their two linebackers?
So yeah, they do like their two linebackers, generally, because right now with the cornerback situation kind of being a little up in the air, that's definitely going to be a target in the draft, is another corner. So, you know, they, that's why they kind of put in Chad, Muma at times, just to kind of see, you know, what he's able to do. But obviously on third and longs, since he's more of a run stopper, he's not out there as often. But they'll drop Devin Lloyd. You know, that they've brought in Trayvon Walker just to have him drop back into coverage at times. And then they'll bring in Dwayne Smoot, who's kind of been that cleanup guy, because he's a lot better when it comes to being able to get around tackles. So he's definitely out there more on those third downs than any other defensive lineman.
All right, I'm noticing, we'll talk about it when we get to the linebackers. I wanted to ask you about Ola Okun, if I pronounced his name there correctly.
Aluakon.
Aluakon, okay. So, when is he used? I'm seeing he's getting a lot of snaps.
Yeah, all the time.
Okay.
He's out there like, I think like 80% of snaps. That's just off the top of my head. You know, don't quote me on that or anything. But yeah, he's on the field the most out of every defender. I think right now he's third in the league in tackles. He was number one last year on the Falcons.
Huh. Okay. So is he the green dot for the team?
Yeah. Yes, he is.
Okay. All right. Wonderful. All right. Let's move on. Talk a little bit about the defensive line, and maybe do they rotate on the defensive line? Do they play a lot of the same guys for a heavy workload? How do they handle it?
Yeah, they are switching it up a lot. They brought in Arden Key, who was from the San Francisco 49ers. He's getting a lot more snaps on the defensive side of the ball. So they'll bring him in. They also they will also, you know, like I said, they'll bring in Smoot, who'll kind of be the one to clean up, to be able to stop some guys on third down. But generally it is like a rotating door, because nobody seems to be that clear guy outside of Josh Allen, who obviously isn't really getting a lot of sacks either. So I think right now the Jaguars are pretty, like, they're at the bottom of the league when it comes to sacks. So I think they're 28th. But it's weird because they're top 10 in hurries and in knockdowns, like quarterback hits. So they just can't finish. It seems like they're playing teams that get the ball out quick. So it's just, they're really low in sacks, and it just seems like maybe it is a rotation issue that they just haven't figured out yet. You know, maybe they should give Trayvon Walker a little bit more chances on third down, to see what maybe he can do. But as of right now, it just seems like there's different guys in there on like every snap.
Okay. All right. I prefer that for rest purposes. We see a heavily rotated defensive line here in Baltimore. I think it's actually worked pretty well for them. So maybe it's just a matter of them, you know, finding the combinations that work as they move along. All right. Pass rush. You want to talk scheme and personnel there, on who they have on the edge? Do they like the blitz? What kind of scheme do they like to use? Whatever you want to talk about.
So they aren't blitzing a ton, to be honest. They have Josh Allen and, you know, like I said, Trayvon Walker on the outside. They also have Arden Key and Dwan Smoot, like I had mentioned. But, you know, outside of those guys, there aren't too many guys that are rushing the passer. Maybe that's why they don't have that many sacks, because they aren't blitzing a ton. They are more, you know, worried about having more of like a shell defense over the top, which is good. You know, they're not letting too many of those boom plays. They're not allowing too many explosive plays. But yeah, the pass rush is a little bit of an issue. Like I said, being 28th in the league, that's one area that they need to clean up.
All right, fair enough. How about we go to some positional groups then? I think we talked enough about the defensive line, but maybe go across in terms of the linebackers and who's playing and what they actually provide to the defense.
Yeah, so Devin Lloyd, he's in the beginning of the season, he was doing really well with like identifying plays, kind of recognizing when maybe the fakes are happening, or, you know, screen recognition. Lately, he's kind of been a little off. So like I said, you know, that's why Chad kind of came in to help him out a little bit. But yeah, Luakon is that main linebacker. You know, he's doing everything from run fits to obviously coverage. But because of their like lack of like production, tight ends have seemed to do pretty well against the Jaguars. There was one drive in particular against the Broncos where Greg Dulcich just like went off. I think right before halftime, the Broncos were down, I believe. And Greg Dulcich had like six catches for like 96 yards, and they just drove down the field to like take the lead right before halftime. So, you know, the Ravens have two really good tight ends in Isaiah Likely and Andrews, Mark Andrews, right? So I would pay attention to those two guys this week. If you're a Ravens fan, or even like in fantasy, maybe that's something that you would want to pay attention to, because the Jaguars definitely has had an issue with stopping them.
All right. Outstanding. So we'll look forward to that, because the Ravens certainly don't have a lot of receiving options. They found one this last week, but Lamar is constantly been struggling with Bateman out. Talk about the secondary a little bit. And I know this has been a banged up area, but take us through each of the players that see regular time.
Yeah. So earlier when you asked about the second year players who have kind of really shown a lot, dude, Tyson Campbell is playing out of his mind. He's doing really well. And it's not surprising. He did really well in college. I believe he was a Georgia Bulldog. You know, those defenders coming out of there are always a little bit better than expected. They can kind of come in and start in an NFL defense. The only trouble he ever really had was kind of getting his head around when he's one-on-one manned up deep. I think McLaurin from the Commanders had a really devastating catch in the fourth quarter on him. I think against the Eagles, he kind of let up, you know, man-to-man, one-on-one up the sideline. That's really his only downfall. He's been working on that, though. I think he's one of the top corners in the league right now. So he's really the standout defensive back. The other one's Andre Sisco. So he's also, he came out of Syracuse, and he's played really well as well.
My alma mater, Syracuse, but going back to Campbell for a moment, he's that prototype aircraft carrier size cornerback at 6'1", 195. Now, you know, I guess you can get up to 206 and you get some 6'2 guys now at cornerback, but at 6'1", 195, to me, that's an aircraft carrier. He's never playing anywhere but on the outside. You wouldn't move that guy into the slot. But you mentioned physicality has not been maybe what you'd hoped from him.
Yeah, I would say when running one-on-one down the sideline, I'm not going to say he gets stacked a lot, where their wide receiver kind of gets in front of him. Mm-hmm. But in terms of at the catch point, he seems sometimes to get a little bit lost. So it's like he's unable to get his head around. He can't determine if it's either going to be a back shoulder, or if it's going to, or if the quarterback is going to lead the wide receiver. So he's, you know, at that catch point, that's when he has a little bit of the trouble. But in terms of the run game and maybe identifying screens and being able to get tackles, solo tackles, he's fine in that department.
Take us back to your own playing days for a moment. And I know you probably had some receiving options in addition to running and from the running back position, but how did you like to work on probably a linebacker in your case who might have been covering you in terms of making them make the wrong move?
Well, yeah, I didn't. So we ran more of like a college style offense where it was spread, but I wasn't really catching the ball that much, but I did play corner. So I played corner against wide receivers, and you know, if anything, they try to maybe look us off with their eyes a little bit sooner, or maybe use their hands like in a gesture. If you're running one of my favorite routes, when you run up the sideline and then you run up, I don't know why that route is slipping my mind, but basically, you know, you kind of put up your hands to kind of fake it out a little bit, but you have to be able to stay in front of your wide receiver. And that's always staying square until you're ready to run with them downfield. And you have to have your hand on them as you look back. And that's one thing that right now Tyson Campbell hasn't been able to do. He's not using the position as a way to kind of attack the ball. He's more of a defender to try to see, okay, can I knock the ball out of his hands? He has to kind of attack the ball a little bit more. And kind of mimic some of the wide receiver tactics when it comes to running down the sideline, keeping your hand on the jersey and looking back so you have a feel for the guy instead of being worried about losing him and always kind of focusing on him. Just kind of turn your head around, look for the ball, and maybe you'll get a chance of actually intercepting it.
So I wanted to dig a little deeper because this is fascinating. This is obviously a great experience you're sharing with us, Bear. But the keeping your hand on the receiver, part of that is making sure you don't run through the receiver. Is that correct? And create that pass interference play?
Yeah, it would be that. And I think a lot of times cornerbacks will be so focused on their guy, they forget about if they just look where the ball is going, then the guy doesn't matter. You know, so you just have to have your hand to see, okay, am I losing him? Because if I can go to the ball, then it doesn't matter exactly where the wide receiver is. So it's more of just like, you know, getting in between him and the ball.
All right. Great insights. Really appreciate you delving into that. Maybe continuing along with the other defensive backs.
Yeah. So Andre Sisco, like I said, the Syracuse, he's a ball hawk, man. So I think he had like the most interceptions, you know, in college football when he was coming out. He doesn't really have a ton of interceptions. I think he has two. Don't quote me on that, though. But Andre Sisco, he actually had two of the defensive pass interference calls last week, or unnecessary roughness where he was leading with his head, quote unquote, where I think he knocked Juju Smith-Schuster out, which I guess some NFL fans are kind of happy about that after all, like the junk that he talks. But he's becoming more of a hard hitter. He's becoming more of a guy that's getting used to the speed of the game. obviously, he just needs to kind of get maybe his hands on the ball a little bit more. And then there's Rayshon Jenkins, who's the safety. And he's night and day from last year. Just his physicality and getting to the ball in general, he just seems like he's been a missile. He's playing in the box, so he will be that guy to kind of stop the screens, blow up those screens. He was on the injury report. I think he was limited in practice. So But, you know, outside of him, and obviously, like you brought up Chaseon, the injuries haven't been that bad. But, yeah, Rayshon Jenkins has been a night and day from last year. He's done really well. And to be honest, this is really surprising stat. The Jaguars are the number one pass defense team in the NFL. They have the most with 61.
I'm sorry, 61 PDs. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's correct. Terrific.
Yeah, it's kind of surprising. Like, you know, I watch their games week in, week out, and I didn't know that they would be in the top, and they're number one. I think they lead it by like 10 or 6 or something like that.
You mentioned they're knocking down some balls at the line of scrimmage, which would figure into that total. Is that a really significant number?
No, I don't think at the line of scrimmage is a huge number. It's more about them doing really well in zone, because they're playing more of a zone defense. So they're able to kind of get in there and knock the ball down, and they're forcing the quarterbacks to kind of throw in tighter windows. Okay. So, which happens to lead to broken up passes.
All right. Outstanding. So I guess the biggest question would be, how do you expect, the Jaguars to try and go after Lamar, either as a passer or otherwise defend against the assets that the Ravens have in this game?
Yeah, it's going to be tough. Like in the past, the Jaguars have had a little bit of an issue with running quarterbacks. Lately, with their weapons in terms of speed, they've gotten a lot better. You look at Trayvon Walker; he's definitely a fast guy for his size. Josh Allen can get out there and move. Foye Aluakon, like you mentioned, he's really fast. He's a sideline to sideline defender, linebacker. He can really get out there. They'll probably put a spy on Lamar and kind of keep him. Do their best to keep him contained, because it just seems like everything is so off script with Lamar. And that's one thing I'm afraid of, is the scramble drill, in terms of, the secondary, not getting out of position, because that happened a lot against Patrick Mahomes. There was one play where Patrick kind of ran out of the pocket and he got, I think, not Kenny Galladay, Kadarius Toney, one of those Giants players. Mm-hmm. He got Kadarius Toney for his first touchdown in the NFL. And I'm pretty sure it was the top play in this season, like where the guy was open by the most yards.
Oh,
so basically a broken play where there wasn't a defender even in his vicinity. So, and that's all because Patrick Mahomes and his wide receivers are always on the same page, even when he's scrambling outside the pocket. So that seems to be a little bit of an issue in the Jaguars defense, especially if you're in like a zone match, where, yeah, it's a zone defense, so you expect all the defenders to kind of stay in their place, right? But when you pull in the match concept, and that means you match the guy that runs into your zone, then you can pull guys away and just bring another guy back underneath, and clear he's out. Wide open. That's because of that zone match concept. So they have to really make sure that the defensive line gets home, and that's the only way to prevent that from happening.
All right. Outstanding stuff. Just fantastic. Can you come maybe up with one player maybe on each side of the ball, or if you just want one player, that's fine, who really matches up well against the Ravens?
So, I mean, like you said, the Ravens right now are kind of having trouble with their wide receivers. That's a little tough, in terms of, I'm trying to think of a matchup for Tyson Campbell. But
they move him in on Andrews even. Have we seen a lot of that? Sauce Gardner went into Andrews.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I just, like you said, I think he's going to stay on the outside. And he's a guy that you just lock down that one side, but everything else, goes to crap. Yeah, that's the Jaguars' defense. No, I'm just kidding. But no, I would say the matchup to really watch would be any of your tight ends, whether that's Likely, or that's Mark Andrews, and that would be against maybe Darius Williams, who's the corner, or if they leave the linebacker in there, and that would be Foye Oluokun. Kind of see maybe how that would work out. I would say that's one of the best matchups so far. And then obviously your stacked defensive line versus the Jaguars offensive line. Right now, they're not terrible. Juwan Taylor. I just mixed those two guys up. Dwayne Smoot and Juwan Taylor. So Juwan Taylor, their right tackle, the Jaguars right tackle, he's been pretty good. He kind of really turned it around from last year. And it was because the Jaguars drafted Walker Little, and they were kind of sharing snaps in preseason. And they really made Juwan like really earn his spot. So the right side, he hasn't been too bad, in terms of, the pass rush. Cam Robinson, the left tackle, he's more of a running, he'll come out and lead block. They obviously then got the Brandon Sheriff, the right guard, from Washington Commanders, and then Luke Fortner, that center. So they've been pretty good. They haven't let up too many sacks for Lawrence. That may be in part Lawrence is kind of getting the ball out quick. But I am kind of excited to see your defensive line against the Jaguars' offensive line. That should be fun.
All right. By the way, really appreciate you coming back because I think I missed asking you about the offensive line at any point. That's a big whiff on my part, but I appreciate you taking us back through those players at this point.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you so much, man.
Lori, always a pleasure to have you on the show, and you're welcome anytime. If you want to talk during the offseason and have some, you know, AFC talk, love to do that with you. Tell folks where they can find your work.
Yeah, so on Twitter, I'm posting all of the articles that I write. Again, that's at Lori Fitzpatrick. I'm going to spell it out. LauriFitzpatrick. At Lori Fitzpatrick on Twitter. And I'm writing articles for USA Today, Touchdown Wire, with Doug Farrar, who does a fantastic job there with us. So touchdownwire.usatoday.com.
All right. Outstanding. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. I'm always looking for a couple of pods per week that are outside of the normal set of shows we do. You know what those are. Hit me up with a DM on Twitter. They're always open. Anything you can do to promote the show is really appreciated. What we are asking people to do is tell one other people about the Know Your Foe episode. So you hear Lori on the show. He's got a lot of interesting things to say about how to play cornerback, for example. See if somebody else might be interested in that. And we really appreciate any word of mouth advertising you could do for us. Lori, thanks again for coming on.
Yeah, not a problem. Guys, can anybody that's interested in gap style run schemes? I'm currently writing an article right now on that. It's kind of up and coming with the lack of size to linebackers. And I think the fullback is kind of coming back. And if there's one team that runs really well, hard nose, some gap style run schemes, that's the Ravens. So I'm going to touch on them a little bit in my next article, so you guys can check that out.
That sounds great, Lori. Well, I'm sure we'll have a lot of people looking for that, and we'll make sure your Twitter handle is included in the promos for the show, so they'll be able to have a way to get back to those articles. Thanks again for coming on.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save